The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today we're joined by one of the last decade's most successful and popular crime fiction and thriller writers, and she has her new book Midnight Feast just out. Lucy Foley, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, for fans of previous books like The Paris Apartment and The Hunting Party and The Guest List, tell us a little bit about The Midnight Feast. What can your fans expect out of it?
Sure. So it is a murder mystery. It's set at the opening of a luxurious new countryside hotel, which is built on old secrets beside an ancient wood. And the action all takes place over this opening weekend. It's the summer solstice. It's a heat wave and tensions and temperatures are rising and some unexpected guests have come to stay. And the morning after this kind of big solstice chic party that they have at the hotel, a body is found on the beach below the cliffs. Who done it?
You have fun, I take it, writing these books.
Oh my goodness, such fun. This was probably the most fun to write, I think. I just really, I loved writing this book and kind of being in the world of the book as well.
What do you mean by being in the world of the book?
So, I mean, both in terms of this kind of Dorset countryside setting, I wanted that kind of real, kind of bucolic, rural, this beautiful sort of cliffside setting with this ancient wood behind it, all of that. I also loved spending time in the world of this luxury hotel. I really wanted to sort of transport you there as the reader. And I wanted you to kind of really want to spend time there until you really, really don't want to be there at all and you want to run 100 miles in the other direction as quickly as possible. I had fun as well with this sort of tension between the local rural community and these sort of wealthy down from Londoners kind of sweeping in their expensive cars to stay at this hotel.
Yeah, your books are often inspired by places you visited, because The Guest List was partly inspired, wasn't it, by a visit to Inishbofin?
Yes, it was. It was. I'd had the idea for a murder mystery set at a wedding, but it really, really didn't come alive, that book, until I travelled to Connemara, got the boat to Inishbofin, and just thought, this is a perfect place for a kind of beautiful destination wedding that could also go horribly wrong. And that brought it to life for me.
You know Connemara well, I believe.
I do. Well, it's where my family originally comes from. So my grandfather came from there. I've still got members of family there. A lot of them are in Dublin. Some of them are in Connemara and Galway. So, yes.
And I believe you became an Irish citizen in recent years, did you?
I did. I did. And it means that both my little boys can be Irish citizens too, which is a kind of wonderful thing to be able to pass on to them.
Why was that important to you?
Well, I mean, I've always been felt very close to my Irish roots. I think through my dad, he feels very strongly Irish, you know, even though he's actually really lived in England his whole life. But I've always sort of connected to Ireland through him, always supported Ireland in the rugby, I have to say. Then obviously it sounds slightly cynical, but obviously with Brexit, you know, it was a way to kind of still keep connected to Europe and Ireland and to kind of give that sort of gift to my little boys as well, of being able to kind of live and work in Europe in the future, but also to have that kind of Irishness to them.
Lucy, it's so rare now to hear people talk about that connection to Europe in England. I mean, even in the general election campaign before tomorrow's election, it's hardly even been mentioned, the whole exit from the European Union.
I know. It's sort of tragic. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, maybe they're just thinking they park it for a few years and then they, you know, maybe we can go back in a few years' time. I don't know if Europe will have us.
There is that. There is that indeed. Okay, let's get to your Culture Club choices.
Thanks.
And we start always with every guest by asking about the first single that they ever remember. And you're the first person to have done this, to actually turn around and say it was either Blur or Oasis. You surely can't do that, given that that was a punchline from a Father Ted joke as well, back in one of the early episodes where Father Dougal was been asked and got utterly confused as to whether he preferred Blur or Oasis.
I know, I still feel confused because I had a real thing for Blur, I had a thing for Damon Albarn, probably, you know, in terms of what do I want to kind of belt out, Oasis. So I definitely bought both of those singles.
So this is Park Life by Blur or Supersonic by Oasis?
Yes, sorry, Park Life by Blur or Supersonic by Oasis. So I definitely went down to HMV with my pocket money, because I was only about 10 at the time, and bought both of them, but I can't remember which one I bought first.
Okay, well, do you know what? We've made a choice for you, because we're going to play what we think is the better song, Park Life.
Is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as. A morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as. John Scott Brewer's crew, he gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him. Who's that gut lord marching? You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise. When I want, except on Wednesdays when I get rudely awakened by the dustman.
Hard to imagine, isn't it, Lucy, that that's 30 years old, because it still sounds every bit as fresh now.
I know, and it makes me feel really old as well.
Hey, whatever it makes you feel like. I feel an awful lot older, believe me. I was an adult when that came out. So, yeah, but it's great, great music. You have terrific choices for your albums as well. So before we talk about the Arctic Monkeys, tell me about how you got into Patti Smith, because she would have been in her heyday, possibly even before you were born.
I know, but I think I sort of, you know, my soul is kind of in another era, really, the sort of 60s or 70s. But I think I actually came to her through a book. I think I came to her through reading Just Kids, which is obviously her kind of memoir of her sort of young love affair in New York with Robert Mapplethorpe. It's just such a great read. And I just sort of wanted to live in the world of that book. And she's just so cool. So I kind of came to her through that, then discovered her music. And I sort of listened to her whenever I want to be a bit more Patti. She's just got that kind of...
Hang on, what does that mean?
...cool going on. But well, the androgynous cool, the kind of don't give her something energy, the, you know, she's just got the swagger, hasn't she? Yeah, and I just love her voice. Because the Night is one of my favourite songs of
it
all
is.
Time.
It is, it's a wonderful cover of the Springsteen song, yeah. Horses Are Easter, the albums that you mentioned by Patti Smith, but you've also nominated, which is one of my favourite albums of the last decade, The Arctic Monkeys and AM. Why have you picked that?
I mean, I just think Alex Turner is a genius, really. I love him as a kind of lyricist. I love storytelling in my music. So I think he's kind of one of the best for that. I love their sound. It also reminds me of a very particular point in my life. I think I was I still at uni? I just remember driving around with my then boyfriend in the car listening to that album over and over again on repeat. So it really takes me back there.
Let's hear a little bit from AM, Do I Want to Know.
Have you got colour in your cheeks? Do you ever get that feel that you got shift the tide? That sticks around like so much in your teeth. Are there some aces up your sleeve? Have you no idea that you're in deep? I dreamt about you nearly every night this week. How many secrets can you keep? 'Cause there's this tune I found that makes me think of you somehow when I play it on repeat. Until I fall. Yeah.
wonderful Arctic Monkeys and Do I Want to Know.
Good, isn't it? Yeah.
It's fantastic from a brilliant album, AM. But as you said, Lucy, you do have a sort of before you were born taste in music, because when we ask who your favourite bands or artists were, tell us about all these 60 selections you made and why.
Oh my goodness. So yes, so I said the Rolling Stones, didn't I, and the Doors.
Yes.
They're just the bands I listen to reach for again. That I reach for to listen to again and again. Just such fun. You know, I feel, have we kind of lost a bit of that fun in music these days? I don't know. I think people, I'm sure, disagree, but it's that kind of, you know, the bad boys of kind of rock and roll. Again, love the storytelling by both bands. Love that kind of swagger they have. But it's that sort of, that kind of campy fun that I think you sense kind of Mick Jagger and Jim Morrison having.
Lucy, in my notes, I'm told you wrote down initially that I'm just a wannabe Mick Jagger or Jim Morrison groupie.
Also possibly true. I watched Almost Famous again recently on a plane. It's one of my favourite films of all time, actually. I should have mentioned that for my favourite film. But, you know, I mean, Kate Hudson's character, she makes it look like a proper job. She takes it very seriously.
It is a great movie, actually. But let's play a little bit of music from the Rolling Stones. From the 1969 album, Let It Bleed, here's the wonderful Gimme Shelter. Wonderful stuff from the Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter. I take it, though, you must, if you love your music as you say you do, you're probably a big gig goer, are you, Lucy?
Oh, I would love to say that I am, but I've got two little boys, and I think possibly the best gig I've been at that I've mentioned is also possibly the last gig I was at. That's so sad.
Okay, well, it probably had more meaning for you. You appreciated it more because what's rare is wonderful.
Absolutely, absolutely true. I think I'm going to go with that, yes.
Okay, and it's Wolf Alice, who are one of the brilliant contemporary bands out of Britain at present. You saw them at the Brixton Academy when, and what were they like?
Oh my goodness, I saw them about a million years ago, and they were just brilliant. It's such a great space because it's quite small, it's intimate. It was just a sort of wonderful buzz in there that night. And they were, you know, they've just got this kind of poppy, rocky, sexy thing going on. You can shout out all the lyrics. Her voice is just stunning, and even better, you know, live, which is really saying something. It was just a wonderful evening.
Okay, we don't have them from Brixton Academy, but this is when Wolf Alice played at Glastonbury 2 years ago, Last Man on Earth.
You've really missed a trick when
Fallis, Last Man on Earth at Glastonbury. Lucy's new book is The Midnight Feast, which is sure to be as successful and popular as her previous novels, because I think actually, isn't it the last one that you did, The Paris Apartment? The movie rights have been acquired to that, Lucy, haven't they?
That's right, yes. So that's really exciting. That's sort of underway. And the TV rights, I can say, have been acquired for The Midnight Feast. So that's also underway, which is exciting.
Which brings us on to your favourite movies and TV and other items for the Culture Club. We always ask everyone for a favourite movie, or if they don't want to nominate an actor or a movie, they can nominate an actor or a director. You've gone for an Italian director who made The Great Beauty, Paolo Sorrentino. Tell us about him.
Oh my goodness, I mean, I love all of his films, so it was difficult to pick. Actually, I say that, it wasn't difficult to pick. The Great Beauty is just, I mean, it's just the most beautiful film. It's set in Rome. It's about a sort of aging novelist. He's written one book and apparently has been very successful because he can afford to live in an apartment kind of overlooking the Colosseum, which seems quite nice. And it's just this sort of wonderful kind of fever dream of a film, really. It's full of beauty, as you'd expect. It starts with this wild party on the rooftop of his kind of apartment building. But it's also a kind of film about lost love. It's about the city of Rome itself. It's just glorious.
How old a movie is that? When is it set?
I think that's only about 10 years old. Might not even be that old. But it's got a timelessness to it. It sort of feels like it could be from any era.
And Sorrentino, you say your favourite director. Do you watch a lot of foreign language movies?
I do. I think there's something about certainly European film. I feel like they can take risks that Hollywood seems to be wary of taking. You know, I feel like Hollywood seems to be so kind of driven by the bottom line these days. You know, you've got the kind of superhero films and all of that, and that seems to be taking up all the oxygen. And I just think, you know, you get these kind of little art house films in Europe, South America as well. I watched a brilliant film called The Delinquents recently, which I think is Argentinian. So yeah, I do like a bit of foreign film. No, that makes me sound very sort of fancy. But
no, because I'm also taking, my notes tell me that when we asked you for a favourite play or a theatre show or musical, it comes back as saying that you kind of hate musicals and that you're really picky about plays. Why do you hate musicals?
I hate musicals because, that's a controversial statement, isn't it? But I find them a little bit embarrassing. I don't know. I often think, why sing it when you could just say it? And I say that as someone that loves music. I don't know. There's always just, there's something, they've just never really got me. But I've never seen Hamilton. So maybe if I saw that, I'd be converted.
I think you might. I think your rule is a good one, but there are some exceptions and Hamilton would possibly be it. And you say you're picky about plays. If you love the written word and the speaking of the written word, and if you love great stories, why not plays?
I know, this is terrible because this makes me sound like a real Luddite, but I think it's because so much comes down to the performance, and I hate it when, I know it sounds like a weird thing to say, but I hate it when I can see them acting, if you know what I mean. And that seems to happen a lot in theatre. I love reading plays, as I love reading screenplays for kind of great films. But, you know, I can get really turned off by just things being slightly wrong in the production. I don't know if that makes me sound like a terrible person. That being said, I have watched some really great plays in the past. And I loved Julie at the National Theatre a few years ago. It was a remake of kind of Strindberg's Miss Julie by a young female playwright, Polly Stedham, and it was just brilliant, kind of wild, a real sort of on stage spectacle. Julie sort of reimagined as this party girl, kind of wild pill popping descent into disaster and madness.
Actually have a clip, and I think Vanessa Kirby, who sort of plays that character maybe as Princess Margaret in The Crown, and who has also been in things like the Mission Impossible movies. This is Vanessa Kirby as Julie and Eric Kofi Abrefa as Jean in the 2018 adaptation at the National Theatre.
But you never felt like this.
Like what?
It's like this.
What?
Alone.
I don't understand.
No, I didn't think so.
So why are you asking me that?
Well, because you seem happy.
Do I?
Well, sort of.
Oh, what's that got to do with it?
Just tell me that I'll feel better. Tell me that I'll feel better.
You'll feel better.
Yes, no one can know that, though. No one can actually know that.
These things will pass.
I don't know if they do.
I've been lonely from it before.
What?
People. Love.
You?
Why is that a surprise?
You don't exactly seem like someone who gives much away.
Oh, because you don't know me.
Well, I said seem.
Okay, that's from Julie at the National Theatre with Vanessa. That was Vanessa Kirby that you would have heard there. So, Lucy, so when we ask for a favourite book or author from a writer, we normally get a long list, and thank you for managing to plump for one. You've gone for something that may be familiar to Netflix viewers from the recent adaptation starring Andrew Scott. You've gone for The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith. Tell us why that book is one that you love so much.
I know. I mean, it seems like such an obvious answer for a thriller writer, doesn't it? But I come back to that again and again, both as a reader and as a writer. I just think it's such a clever book because he's a really unlikable protagonist, and yet we root for him, or rather we don't root for him, but we want him to get away with it. And how does Patricia Highsmith do that? It's a kind of genius. And, you know, I love to write unlikable characters. So I sort of use that as my kind of core text, really, for when I'm thinking about how to make the reader uncomfortably sort of side with one of those characters. It's also, you know, wonderfully kind of glamorous and globetrotting. I love the time we spend on this Italian island. It's so, so well written. I think that's the thing when I read it again, which I've done many times, you know, that's the thing I always come back to, because it's so brilliantly plotted. I think we can forget how wonderful the writing is. I mean, I love the whole of the Ripley ad, as it's called, the kind of five books, but that is my favourite. I love the Anthony Minghella adaptation of it, and I nearly said that for my favourite film. But I also...
That's the one that Matt Damon is in.
That's the Matt Damon one, the Jude Law, Matt Damon, the jazz, the sort of love, you know, the kind of love, you know, love affair that sort of really amped up, I think, between Ripley and Dickie, or one-sided love affair, I should say.
Have you watched the Netflix TV adaptation?
Well, this is what I was going to say. I love that too. It's completely different. I think it's also a lot truer to the book in some ways. I took a while to get on board with the black and white thing, simply because, you know, Italy and colour, and I was sort of remembering that from the Minghella version. But I think it's brilliantly done, and actually that kind of chiaroscuro effect that you have with the black and white, I think, is really clever. And Andrew Scott is just brilliant, isn't he? He can do so many things with his face. I mean, he can basically have no expression, and you just know that there's so much going on inside. He's kind of really is a one in a million kind of actor of a generation.
But actually, let's get back to the book, because we have a little extract from the audio version of Patricia Highsmith's The Talented Mr. Ripley.
I wasn't quite sure you were Tom Ripley, Mr. Greenleaf said. I've seen you only once before, I think. Didn't you come up to the house once with Richard? I think I did. The Shrivers gave me a description of you, too. We've all been trying to reach you because the Shrivers wanted us to meet at their house. Somebody told them you went to the Green Cage Bar now and then. This is the first night I've tried to find you, so I suppose I should consider myself lucky. He smiled. I wrote you a letter last week, but maybe you didn't get it. No, I didn't. Mark wasn't forwarding his mail, Tom thought. Damn him. Maybe there was a check there from Auntie Dottie. I moved a week or so ago, Tom added. Oh, I see. I didn't say much in my letter, only that I'd like to see you and have a chat with you. The Shrivers seemed to think you knew Richard quite well. I remember him, yes? But you're not writing to him now? He looked disappointed. No, I don't think I've seen Dickie for a couple of years. He's been in Europe for 2 years. The Shriver spoke very highly of you and thought you might have some influence on Richard if you were to write to him. I want him to come home. He has responsibilities here, but just now he ignores anything that I or his mother tried to tell him.
The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith, who, I've been reading some work about her recently, Lucy. She was quite the character, wasn't she? I hope you're not trying to emulate her now in your own life.
No, I mean, she really was. I was reading her kind of diaries and letters, and I did love the idea of a sort of three martini lunch before going back to try and write a bit more of a novel. I mean, she had some quite objectionable ideas as well, you know, and views. So the less said about those, the better. But we can say that she was a brilliant writer.
Absolutely. Separate the artist from the art and all that. Television. As a child, what is it that you used to watch?
So I used to watch The Simpsons. It was, you know, back in the good old days where things were on at a certain time and The Simpsons would be on as I got home from school, and I would run into the house. I would drop my backpack, run through the house and turn it on just in time for the kind of theme tune to start up. Oh, so good.
And then now, what would be your favourite?
I mean, so difficult because I watch so much TV. I'm making myself sound like a real Luddite here. I sort of hating on plays and loving TV shows. But, you know, I think there's some really, really great stuff out there. But I've gone for Succession just because I think the writing is so clever. The acting is brilliant. They ended it just when they should have done. And funnily enough, as I was thinking about these, I realised The Simpsons and Succession actually have a weird amount in common. They're both kind of satires about American families. I love kind of family dynamics. That's something I really enjoyed exploring in The Guest List in particular. But I mean, Succession, I love so much that I have actually bought the screenplays and sort of read them from start to finish of all four seasons, but just because the writing's so great.
God, I thought I was obsessed by watching every episode at least three times, but that's taking it to a different level. And the difference between Succession and The Simpsons, you've already alluded to, at least they knew when to finish in Succession, unlike The Simpsons. We have a clip from the final season of Succession when the Roy family meets for what they didn't realise was going to be the last time. If you haven't watched Succession at this stage, you must know what happens. But anyway, we also have to give you the obligatory bad language warning.
I just want to get us all together. What you kids don't realise, this is a good deal. The world likes it. It makes sense. But deals have a habit of disappearing because pricks like Madsen get pissed off or snubbed. This is real.
Okay, well, I think I can speak for everyone, can I? When I say, go ask him for more money.
But why?
Just good business sense. Gotta make our own pile.
Oh, come
like that.
On.
Yeah, I mean, it's what my gut is telling me, and so I gotta listen to my gut. It's all I got to go on.
Jesus. You're such dopes. You are not serious figures. I love you. But you are not serious people.
Brilliant stuff from Succession. Okay, we ask every guest, Lucy, to finish by giving something maybe unexpected, a so-called buried treasure that people should know about but isn't necessarily particularly popular. And you've gone for a book called The Wheel Spins by Ethel Lyne White, which was made into the movie by Alfred Hitchcock, The Lady Vanishes. Tell us why you've picked this, please.
So I've picked this. I mean, obviously, it was discovered by Hitchcock at the time. And so, you know, it had a moment then. But I just think, you know, this is another book that I come back to again and again in my writing. I think it's so brilliantly done. It's kind of the original girl on the train in a way. You know, the main character, Iris, witnesses something happen on the train. No one believes her. I'm not going to say any more than that because I'll give you too many spoilers. But it has such great pace. It's so glamorous, the setting. It's set on a train speeding through Europe between the wars. It's wonderful. And I just think it's one of those books that's been slightly lost to time. And I sort of want to give it a second lease of life. I'm going to talk about it as much as possible. I'd love to see a kind of, 2024 adaptation of it. I mean, you could set it now, you could set it then. I just think it's sort of ripe for the film treatment, really.
Well, we have a brief clip from the audio version of the book.
Soon, the slack convention of the crowd had been relaxed. They grew brown, they drank and were merry, while matrimonial boundaries became pleasantly blurred. Surrounded by a mixed bag of vague married couples, it was a sharp shock to Iris when one of the women, Olga, suddenly developed a belated sense of property and accused her of stealing a husband. Besides the unpleasantness of the scene, her sense of justice was outraged. She had merely tolerated a neglected male who seemed a spare part in the dislocated domestic machine. It was not her fault that he had lost his head. To make matters worse, at this crisis, she failed to notice any signs of real loyalty among her friends, who had plainly enjoyed the excitement. Therefore, to ease the tension, she decided not to travel back to England with the party, but to stay on for 2 days longer, alone.
The Wheel Spins by Ethel Lyne White brings us to the end of Lucy Foley's Culture Club. Lucy, thank you so much for being with us, and best of luck with your new book, Midnight Feast.
Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.